Well, on Monday, I'll mention a little bit about the new co-host for the midday. But in the meantime, well, as fate would have it, we have almost as a pinch hitter here, just for this one half hour, actually, a very distinguished guest in the person of a major composer of our time, Aaron J. Kernis. Welcome to the midday.
It's really nice to be here. My first time in Wisconsin also.
Is it really?
Uh-huh.
Because you've been working in Minnesota for a while, I guess.
A lot, and for a long time. And I've only come to Wisconsin down around Stillwater just to look at quilts or something, or to walk into a park. And that's been the extent. So I'm glad to be here.
Well, a whole new world awaits you.
Absolutely.
And we should mention why you're in town, of course. One of the reasons, at least, is this is the third and final week of a phenomenon called Same Carriage, Fresh Horses. It's a series of concerts by the Bach Dancing and Dynamite Society, and it includes performances of three works by Aaron J. Kernis, who, by the way, is the youngest composer to win a Pulitzer Prize. The concerts by the Bach Dancing and Dynamite Society this weekend take place at the Stoughton Opera House. There's one there tonight at 7:30. Another one in Madison at the Playhouse and the Overture Center. That's tomorrow night at 7:30. Two performances on Sunday at the Frank Lloyd Wright Theater in Taliesin in Spring Green. And the first of those, Sunday afternoon at 2:30, is sold out, I'm told, but there is still one open Sunday night at 7:30, and there will be, I think, at least three of your works included in those concerts.
In those, they'll be on the first program tonight, and Sunday afternoon, A Piece of Mind for Guitar and String Quartet, and then on the Saturday night and Sunday night concerts, a work for narrator and violin, cello, piano, and also the newest work, which I'll be performing in myself, a song cycle, for soprano, violin, guitar, and piano.
You're the pianist, is that what you're going to play all the parts?
I'm just playing this, luckily, just the piano part, which is hard enough, believe me.
I can imagine that it would be. You are, as they say, a man of many parts because of those pieces that you mentioned. Their instrumentation is different for everyone.
And each piece is extremely, very varied sorts of pieces. And some are very funny and entertaining, and the song cycle is more touching and serious and lyrical. The first piece that will be on tonight's concert and Sunday afternoon's concert is a piece called 100 Greatest Dance Hits. And it's based on sort of a reminiscence of certain kinds of popular music that have inspired me over the years. There's a bit of salsa here and there, and some drumming and some easy listening music
easy listening.
thrown in there too. And
can't wait to hear that. Well, you have also just come from, was it last night, the debut of one of your choral works?
That's right. I was in the Twin Cities, where the American Guild of Organists convention was going on all week, and they'd commissioned a piece for organ and choir, which was premiered at the St. Paul Cathedral last night. So that was a thrill.
And this, speaking of choral music, comes from some years earlier, I gather sometime 2001 or prior, at least 2001 is when we got this wonderful little choral gem of yours. It's called How the Soul Speaks to God. Was this a commission also?
This was actually part of a group of pieces called Ecstatic Meditations that I wrote for the same choral director, Philip Brunel, who premiered last night's piece.
And here it is from the San Francisco Symphony Chorus with Vance George directing, the music of Aaron J. Kernis, How the Soul Speaks to God.
Thank you.
if I may say so, one of the more gorgeous choral works out there today. The work in this case of Aaron J. Kernis, who's with us for the next 20 minutes or so during the midday. That was How the Soul Speaks to God from the San Francisco Symphony Chorus. Tell me about your relationship with the muses. And immediately that elicits a smile, but it's one thing, I suppose, to say, well, I'd really like to. I just feel like I feel inspired to write, say, an opera. But what do you do if nobody wants an opera? I mean, you do have to make a living.
Yeah, it's true. I am very fortunate that quite a few people are asking me for pieces, and so I have a kind of list for a few years at a time. And what that enables me to do is, well, I mean, first of all, I'll agree to pieces that I'm excited about, and there's some, you know, some tricky ones in there and having a list will enable me to think about those, let the ideas for that piece, those pieces develop in my unconscious for a time while I'm writing something else. And hopefully, and I hope that in most cases, when I'm done with the last piece, I'll be kind of primed and excited about the next. And if it occasionally that doesn't happen, then I have to really scrape to find a few ideas. But I try
that
not to.
Prokofiev or Stravinsky, I forget which one, maybe both actually, who pretty much forced himself to write every day something, whether he was inspired or not, just to keep those creative juices flowing.
It's a very good idea, because, and I know a lot of composers who actually adopt a kind of 9-to-5 or whatever period of time every day. And it, you know, composing or making art is not really, I mean, what they say it is true, that it's, what, 10% inspiration, whatever, you know that famous quote, 90% perspiration is really true. You just kind of have to keep the energy and the ideas moving every day if you can. I've never been able to make that work, so the 9-to-5 routine is a kind of dream for me, and now that I have children, it's even more difficult.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have to ride the wave as it comes along, and maybe that was subconscious too, because the next thing we're looking at here is your Symphony in Waves. I was going to compliment you on your creative titles, which is an art which has still not come back, I think. We still suffer too much from generic titles in classical music.
Yeah, I try to think very hard about my titles and have them be just a little bit, you know, just a little bit more interesting than the usual, and yet I haven't yet written many pieces with one word. I mean, one word titles have been popular in the last few years, just as one word restaurant names, you know, like butter and prune and slate. And so,
well, when you come up with the prune symphony, let us know. Well, this is the Symphony in Waves, and why waves?
Well, I've always drawn a lot of inspiration from the water and from being near the water. It seems to be, it's probably all the ozone, all the good, the wind and the sky and all these open things that allow my creativity to flourish. So I wanted to write a piece that examined different types of waves and used that as a kind of initial basis for each movement in different ways.
And this is the second movement, the Scherzo, and after it, in about 12:34, something like that, we'll have today's 12:30 quiz question, just a little bit after its time. This is the Scherzo from the Symphony in Waves by Aaron J. Kernis from the New York Chamber Symphony of the 92nd Street Y, with Gerard Schwartz conducting. Thank you. Well, there's a lot of wave action going on there. That's the scherzo from the Symphony in Waves. Almost a little, what, boogie woogie kicking in there toward the
piano. Yeah, a little, little piano. Tiny little tribute to Jerry Lee Lewis and boogie woogie. And there's some earlier on with a kind of wild cello solo and bass clarinet. There's also that hint of that music that comes back at the end.
Well, it's a lot of fun. We'll find out how it plays out in an influence from Beethoven in a minute or two here. We have this quiz question to get to, though. First, the review of yesterday's 12:30 quiz question. It was, when it went national, this Seattle-based company made its logo more demure. That would be, do you know the answer to that one?
What? Repeat that one once more.
Please. When it went national, this Seattle-based company made its logo more demure. Certainly all over the world now.
I mean, Starbucks. I could take it. That's what's going to be the guess.
Yeah, well,
but I can't remember the logo. It's the most obvious.
It's
once
the
you say
kind
Seattle,
of a mermaid, you know. And need we say more? But if you go to the Starbucks in Seattle, the logo is the original one. In case you ever want to compare when you're in the neighborhood there. That was yesterday's question. Here's today's, and this being Friday, we have one of our occasional movie questions. The co-stars of this 1990s film are on screen together for only about 2 minutes. Full-length movie, but the co-stars of this 1990s film are on screen together for only about 2 minutes. Name that film the usual way. Now, we don't have email available today, but you can talk to Sarah back there in audience services if you call either of the phone numbers, and they are from Madison, 263-1236, or from anywhere else, 1-800-442-7106. You can call her between now and 1 o'clock, and we'll draw as usual from the names of all correct respondents to see who wins the treasure trove on this Friday edition of the Midday. Well, we talked a little bit about the great names for your pieces, Aaron, and that would apply also to your symphony number 2, not just to the symphony, which is called, actually, the string quartet number 2, I should say, which is the one that won you the Pulitzer Prize.
Mm-hmm. It did.
It's called the Musica Instrumentalis, and the final movement is Double Triple Gigue Fugue, inspired by Beethoven.
That's right. It's inspired by, I forget the opus number of the string quartet, but there is a double fugue in this particular movement of I think it's opus 59 number 1. Very famous, super fast fugue. And I decided I wanted to use that as a model and then go one further and make a triple fugue. And so when the music returns about halfway through, there is a triple fugue that's going on. So it's quite fast and furious.
I'm envisioning a page, pages black with notes. A
lot of notes.
And here they are.
True. And you'll hear all of them. They play them very well.
From the Lark Quartet, the Double Triple Gigue Fugue after Beethoven, the finale of the String Quartet number 2 of Aaron J. Kernis. One more time to get that name just right. That was the Double Triple Gigue Fugue after Beethoven, the finale of the String Quartet number 2. The name of the String Quartet number 2 is Musica Instrumentalis, and it was written in 1997 by our guest today, Aaron J. Kernis, who won the 1998 Pulitzer Prize in Music for that very work. That performance was by the Lark Quartet. How much control do you have, Aaron, over what record labels do to place your pieces once you've written and recorded them. I mean, this is an interesting combination on this one fairly recent CD. Let's see, we got it in January 2008. The name of the disc is The World Beloved, a Bluegrass Mass. And you have a piece on here, but it's not part of the mass. So
right.
how did that come about?
That was one of those recordings that just happened. I knew nothing about it.
Oh, really?
I mean, I knew that the choral group, who I work with a lot, I knew they were doing a recording of it, but I had no idea what it would appear with. And it just appeared, and it's great. I mean,
it's
I'm happy to have...
The mass is a very interesting
yeah.
piece.
And I'm happy to have, the mixture of American choral music out there.
So how did you come to write Come Dance, O Lord?
Well, this movement, I Cannot Dance, O Lord, is also one part of the same group of pieces that the first piece you started off today's broadcast with, a series of four choral pieces. And I've written a lot of choral music over the years. I was a choral singer. That's the very first thing I did when I was 11, and helped me to read music, and I just grew to have a love of the human voice through doing that. And it kind of fits well in with the newest piece that is being done here this weekend, which is called Two Awakenings and Double Lullaby. And there's really nothing I love writing for than the human voice. And I also love searching for mystical and spiritual poetry, and much of the poetry in this weekend cycle is there's an English mystical text from the 1600s. There's a beautiful text about how light appears in a young girl in a young child through her body, through her everything she does. And this piece is about my two kids, my twins, and a lullaby movement for a double lullaby with two lullaby texts. So,
I Cannot Dance, O Lord.
I Cannot Dance, O Lord.
Cannot Dance, O Lord, from the works of Aaron J. Kernis, one of those pieces that you write and apparently don't know where all it's going to turn up.
It happens a lot. It's actually really wonderful when works show up in places you don't expect and where people have not called you and told you. And it's a great way when you to know that pieces are getting out there into the world.
They just take on a life of their own.
That's right.
Well, let's have a short intermezzo here in the form of an intermezzo. We're going to go back to the Symphony in Waves from the New York Chamber Symphony of the 92nd Street Y. Giving you a little more sense of that wave action in the Symphony in Waves. That was the intermezzo, the fourth of the five movements of that work by our guest today, Aaron J. Kernis, who is in Wisconsin only for the second time after all
That's
these
right.
years.
That's working. A nice long little, well, not long stay, but I think I'll see a lot of it.
You'll see a lot of people, too, I expect, coming out to those concerts that include your music. This weekend, concerts by the Bach Dancing and Dynamite Society. You can find out about those concerts, get tickets, that kind of thing, by going to their website, which is www.bachdancinganddynamite.org. or you can call 608-255-9866. There's a concert tonight in Stoughton and concerts Saturday night in Madison, and then two concerts Sunday in Spring Green at Taliesin. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
It's been really nice to meet you, Norman.
And if we ever need another co-host, I hope you'll be available.